Welcome back to part two of the podcast, where we get to know more about our guest and their path into the world of data science, machine learning, and oil and gas. We're back with Alex Bea. Now, Alex, a lot of people seem to be very interested in how do you get into data science? A lot of people may want to pursue careers in data science and machine learning. How does one get into these things, and how does one pursue a career? How did you get into it exactly?
Well, it was a very convoluted path to get here. I came out of school with a PhD in aerospace engineering in about 2013. And at that time, I knew I really liked what I did, but part of my PhD programming, doing some quantum mechanics and quantum statistics and predicting like what spectral responses would be. And so I knew I wanted to keep going down that route of scientific computing. So I joined a consulting firm doing scientific computing. And at that time, that company themselves even debated whether they wanted to put the A word on their website. And that A word at that time is analytics. And I feel like analytics is almost a precursor to data science. They're different, but I feel like if you can do data science, you can almost do analytics. And maybe the other way around. I feel like one's maybe more stats-based, one's more comp-sci-based, but I think that's up for people to debate.
Which one's the comp-sci one? Is that data science?
I would call it data science. Okay. Yeah. Anyhow, I digress on that point. So
okay, I have to interrupt again. aerospace, and you were doing quantum.
Okay, so it was...
What was that exactly?
It was more applied physics. My PhD was in Raman spectroscopy in supersonic flames. And so there were two components to it. One, I had to build a supersonic flame that could, you know, have lasers shot through it. So really small.
What's a supersonic flame?
It's like the afterburner of a jet.
Okay.
It's supersonic, okay. And it's a flame.
Okay.
And the second component to that was developing a new laser diagnostic system. So you shoot a laser through a gas and you do spectroscopy on it. It was laser spectroscopy. And so put the two together, created a supersonic flame, and I shot a laser through it and collected the scattered light from it in the spectrometer and analyzed it. And so it was that analysis part of the scattered light where I was doing a lot of that computational work around, okay, what are the different quantum states? How do we simulate it? And how do we get the experiment results? How do we explain those using the synthesis, so to speak?
I love how varied everybody's backgrounds are here. I gotta say, I've only been here for a couple of weeks, but already when you ask people how they got into these things and their backgrounds that they had before they came here, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I've met a lot of people during my consulting time that there's very few like common themes to people's backgrounds. Uh-huh. It's so diverse. And I think this is really starting to be a result of like open courses or massively uh-huh. online open courses. It enables access to everybody from all sorts of different fields. But we're all, for the most part, scientific yeah. in nature. And I think it's that common thread that allows us all to pursue this field.
Yeah, and just working on interesting problems. And of course, they all have some kind of data analysis. So, okay, so you said you were getting into this, you were in yep. an analysis, what was it? Consulting?
So it was originally more, it was more scientific computing and consultancy around that. How do we write software for these intense scientific, you know, applications or analysis? In reality, I think the company had been doing what is today called data science, but I think they'd been doing it all along, just been calling it software engineering.
Yeah.
But I think as data science and analytics started to become prominent around 2013, they added that kind of part as to their titles as to what they say they did.
Yeah.
But in reality, I think they've been doing it. They had been doing it for 30 years at that point.
Yeah.
And I joined in thinking, okay, scientific computing, this sounds cool to me. Analytics and data science started to show up. I took Andrew Ng's machine learning course when I mm-hmm. first joined the company because some other guy was taking it. I was like, oh man, that sounds cool. I want to, uh-huh. how does a machine learn?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a really famous one.
Yeah, so I think at a bare minimum, everybody takes that. And it just kind of went from there. The first couple projects I did with them were really around, it was really truly software engineering for scientific purposes. But over time, because I started to push the direction I wanted my career to go, I started getting more and more data science-like projects. And I worked with people who had worked on those types of projects before. So I was being tutored along that route. I was being taught. I was learning on my own. I was getting experience. And so I went from a pure aerospace engineering background with some software engineering, and then throw onto that now a curveball towards data science. Uh-huh. And that started in around 2015, where I could really start to feasibly call myself a data scientist. So there was a lot around that. And then 2016 rolls around, and we're starting to talk about TensorFlow. I remember the first time I saw that on a resume for somebody we were looking at. Like, what is TensorFlow?
Uh-huh.
And I started to learn about convolutional neural networks. I'm like, oh, this is awesome stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so around 2016, I started getting the itch. I really wanted to start doing just heavy hitting data science stuff, and started looking and found the group I'm in now. They were starting it. I saw 6 or 7 job postings for this group, and I said, all right, let's pursue it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at now. And ever since I've been here, it's just been, it really has been an incubator here. I mean, I came in and I knew a good amount of data science. And it's just like when you leave your PhD where you know you don't know a lot. You know that you know very little. And that's how I felt coming into here. And being here in this group now with all the training opportunities available, yeah, with all of the hardware accelerators available, and just everything, I've realized I know less and less and less and less. But it's not because I think I'm not learning it at a rate that is not, you know, adequate enough. It's just the field is growing so fast.
So speaking of what people know, and you mentioned a course that you think everybody should take course. What do you think people who want to get more into this or want to try to do kind of the curveball you did, what would you recommend as far as skill sets and what to be looking into and what to be learning right now?
I think the most foundational thing you can do is have a solid ability to program. And I don't care if it's in, okay, well, yeah, maybe there are some cares in what language you use. You want to make sure it's something that's got the libraries available to it for machine learning, if that's the route you want to go. I mean, obviously, you're not going to choose Visual Basic or something like that, where it's like, okay, well, there's not really many libraries available for it.
Sure.
You know, Python comes to mind.
That seems to be the most ubiquitous from what I can tell.
Yep. Like R.
Yeah.
Now, R's got some packages available to it. You could even run TensorFlow in Java. But once you know how to program one or two languages, you can pretty much program in them all.
Yeah. But so you definitely need the core programming. I mean, I agree. I mostly just ask the questions, but I have to say I agree 100% on that one.
Yeah, I got to say.
And it seems like that can be one of the hardest. From what I've noticed, it seems like a lot of times that's the hardest for people to pick up if you don't already have that piece. I don't know if you agree with that one.
I'm trying to think about that because I came at it from wanting to program for fun in high school and doing it more so for fun in undergrad and then doing it for my project in grad school.
Uh-huh.
So I know people who don't like programming,
uh-huh,
and obviously they're not data scientists. Or I shouldn't say obviously, but they are not data scientists.
Yeah.
I haven't met a data scientist who can't program yet.
Yeah.
They the ones I know all typically know how to program.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have to say that it is almost a requirement to be able to enter into this field. Just being able to program, being comfortable programming. To go to your point,
mm-hmm,
you know, have I met people who don't know how to program? Or yeah, in this field, that's I can't say I've met somebody who doesn't know how to program.
So talking to Vince actually last week, at one point he mentioned to me that he thought that data science was the intersection of computer science, math, and statistics. Mm-hmm. Would you say that that's about, so we, and then maybe are those the other two that people would need to, so the coding, we'll say coding CS,
yeah,
maybe they're not the same, but let's just say lump those, and then would you say math and stat, would you say those would be the main?
Yes, absolutely. In thinking about all the problems I've tackled, the CS part, or the computer science, the program part, is the means to the end here. It allows you to take the problem and make it something achievable by the machine. But if you don't have a foundation in the math and the statistics behind what you're trying to do, the program by itself, you can get by brute forcing the subject or brute forcing the issue. And writing some stuff that is really archaic in nature, but not elegant. And so that's where you really need the math and stats to come in. For example, I had an algorithm going back to the false segmentation work that we were talking about earlier. I had a brute force method for doing something, but then entered Bayesian statistics. And by no means am I a Bayesian statistician, but I know enough to get by. I know enough to read a research article, figure out how to apply it to what I'm doing. And a couple things I noticed. A, my code got shorter as I wasn't forcing the issue. My code ran faster and it ran better. The results were genuinely better. And so I think having stats is going to be helpful. Having a background in math is going to be helpful. Being able to figure out how to do, you're not going to be doing actual derivatives of equations in your code, but if you can figure out how to estimate the derivatives, if you need to, how to maybe do estimations of integrals, maybe using, I think it was like Simpson's rule or a couple other ways, knowing the ways to do those in code. I'm not saying I use this on a daily, monthly, or yearly basis, but I know all that exists. And that is what helps me in being part of my toolbox.
So here's something I hadn't really thought of before, that just this conversation is kind of sparking this thought, and I'll pass it by you, see what you think. But just reading research papers, because you keep mentioning, you have already mentioned, I think, in both of the problems, you did a lot of research, or if you want to call it a literature review or whatever you want to call it, for both of those problems, and talking about reading these different papers, it seems like that would be, that maybe is a skill people might even need to pick up in these kind of environments. And I noticed there are a lot of PhDs here, mm-hmm. which I don't know necessarily if you have to have a PhD for these things, but I'm sure that does help at least with like reading, being able to go through a lot of research papers effectively.
Yeah. So to answer that in two parts, one, being able to read research articles, I think is a critical component as we go. So I mentioned earlier, the field is growing so fast. It's impossible to keep up with it. And so you're gonna have to be able to do research and knowing where the field is going, either reading articles, maybe in archive, or maybe some of the proceedings from NIPS or mm-hmm. other conferences, even Medium articles, they give you a really good digest at a high level if they're summarizing papers for you. And that's kind of the background machine learning part. But like I said, in the ideation phase, how do we break things down into maybe a time series analysis, et cetera? Being able to do research and looking at articles around other topics outside of machine learning, around the math and stats area, it's essential. It's critical to what we do. And so, yeah, you've got to be able to have those critical thinking skills. And I don't mean, you know, being able to whip out an equation real quick and think critically about a topic. No, it's really, you've got to be able to go read an article or know how to even just find the articles. How do you chase them down? Maybe looking at references, looking at citations, and going deeper down the rabbit hole. There's so much to this that a lot of people have experience with that translates over from wherever you come from, like from aerospace engineering. Mm-hmm. You know, literature review, I'm sure, is common among all the different fields, and we all do it, you know, I assume fairly well.
Yeah.
So, back to the other point, you mentioned you've seen a lot of PhDs here. I've told a lot of people here who think about pursuing a PhD later in life, because they want to solve a certain problem. And the point I make to them is you don't have to have the PhD to solve the problem. A PhD just shows that you know how to learn. You know how to do research, you know how to do literature review,
yeah.
And you have the capability within yourself to frame a problem, research it, and solve it, which is what a data scientist does. We frame the problem, we research it, we solve it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have the PhD to do that. And like I've told people who want to go do it, you certainly are within your rights and means to go pursue a PhD. But if there's a true problem out there existing in civilization that you want to solve, there's nothing stopping you from defining it, researching it, and trying to give it your best solution.
Yeah.
And that's what we do when we come in here as a data scientist. You know, you've got your well logs and you know how to do it, but how do we use a machine to do it? Okay, well, we've defined what we're going to do. We're going to ideate, which is the research component. And over time, we're going to solve it and deploy it. And so that really is...
Well, thank you for that. That's really interesting. I think that could be very actually helpful for a lot of people to hear a lot of that stuff. Do you have any other, before we conclude here, any other thoughts, maybe just like about the field as a whole, data science you mentioned? So it's changing rapidly and growing mm-hmm. rapidly, kind of hard to keep up maybe with.
Yeah. So it scares me sometimes when I do these intern interviews where maybe we'll interview 12 or 15 candidates in one day, and all of them have these research topics and machine learning where my jaw just drops. Like, how am I going to be able to keep up with yeah. all these new advances? Uh-huh. And I love doing intern interviews for that purpose alone, yeah. because it just shows me and really drives home how little I know and how fast this is evolving. And it's a field that I think if you compare it to any other field at any other point in time, you can look at it right now and saying it's growing faster, I think, than all other fields at any other point in time, mm-hmm. because of how widespread it is, how democratized it is. You don't have to have a PhD to do research in it. You don't have to have a PhD to publish in it these days.
All you really have to have is like a laptop, basically, right?
All you have to have is a laptop, maybe know how to use Word or LaTeX.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And maybe a GPU.
Yeah, Python, basically.
And Python. You can do your own research. You can publish independently. And that's it. And so because of how democratized it is, it's going to grow so fast. As it is, it's growing so fast. And I think the rate of increase is going to explode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the part that really gets me, is realizing how little I know, and that amount I feel shrinks every year. But that's just compared to the vastness of what's out there.